JohnRitchie.com. I was unschooled for more or less my entire K through 12. And then I did go to community college full time for 2 years, sort of near the tail end of when I would have been in high school. And that's the extent of my college. I've sort of chosen to do other sort of entrepreneurial, self-directed things instead of continuing on with college.
Let's talk about the educational background, the unschooling.
Yeah, I was the oldest in my family, so sort of the pioneer. I'm 24 years old, so growing up predominantly in the 90s, when unschooling was sort of beyond being a fringe movement, I think, at that point, but still not nearly, I think, as sort of grounded as it is today as a movement.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Woodstock, New York,
okay.
Which is 2 hours north of Manhattan. And I was actually enrolled in a Montessori preschool when I was a wee thing, and that is really wasn't working for me. So my mom started doing a lot of research about alternative education and ultimately decided to pull me out and to homeschool me or unschool me, and then subsequently did the same thing with both my younger siblings. And I think overall, for the entire family, it has been an enormously successful experiment. And so for me, sort of unschooling as I sort of came up into my teen years, pretty naturally evolved into a very sort of self-directed learning model where more and more I was sort of taking sort of the lead architect role in my educational pursuits. Mm-hmm. And of course, leveraging the significant support that I had both from my parents and other mentors in my life. And then moving sort of from there into my adult life, again, sort of the transition was quite fluid and felt quite natural, which was to evolve my very self-directed, very self-created sort of lifestyle into entrepreneurship. It just sort of ultimately ended up feeling really like a natural transition. So in my adult life, I have founded one for-profit company and one non-profit. The for-profit venture was a green home design and build firm. So we designed and built extremely energy-efficient building. And I started that company when I was 19 with another man who was in his early 60s, so had a lot of multi-generational there and sort of the ownership structure.
Amazing, yes.
And we had a lot of fun. We had about a three-year run, and then we had a rather traumatic fall right around sort of when a lot of the markets crashed a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, we had about four employees and had to end up having to lay everyone off. I personally chose to sort of step a little bit back, take like the breather of no longer having employees. We wrapped down our last project. That fall I had a pipeline of we had two projects in contract and two more that we were working on designs for, and all four canceled out from underneath me in a 6-week period. So took sort of the space to step aside from that, and in the following year, co-founded a nonprofit with a lovely young woman who was also an unschooler named Sophie Terrio. And through that nonprofit, we did some really interesting work around alternative education, and we created some programming, including a week-long retreat for young adults, social entrepreneurs and activists who are working on really empowering and powerful change in their home communities. And the retreat was designed to help them examine how to design their projects really as holistically as possible. And then the other thing that we did together was we created a journalism project called the Learnalism Project, sort of combining learning and journalism into one word there, Learnalism. And that project last year did some examination of projects around the West Coast and East Coast that we're taking a really, again, a really holistic approach to sustainability. Mm-hmm. And the idea there was to sort of be celebrating some of the success stories of how humans were creating really deeply harmonious interactions with their landscapes and with each other.
Mm. And that project is still ongoing, isn't it, the Lonalism Project?
Yes, it is. We, both Sophie and I, it's a very part-time thing for both of us, and we still have a quite a bit of material that we gathered during our sort of 3-month trip where we were doing a lot of exploration that has not been produced and published yet, which there was a lot of, it was actually interesting. That project was designed to sort of very much, again, sort of like shed light and be a point of inspiration on these success stories. And what was really interesting about the whole process was that both Sophie and I, I'll speak for myself very personally, I actually had a very sort of surprisingly opposite reaction to doing the actual work, which was sort of like traveling around and visiting these places that were doing really inspiring work, which is that I actually ultimately ended up getting left with a real sort of lowered sense of hope about the world that I did going in. It was a very shaking experience. It was sort of, I'm generally an extraordinarily optimistic person.
So why did you think that, I mean, I'm just wondering why you had that reaction?
Well, I've thought a lot about this in the last, in the following year. The way I sort of come away from it is that I've spent so much, I've grown up in this time where I've been aware for as long as I can remember that I'm part of a generation that faces some enormous challenges, socially and environmentally. And in a lot of ways, there's an enormous weight on my generation to sort of deal with a sort of collection of blooming catastrophes. And so in visiting these projects that were doing these powerful things, I feel like I was left with this sense of it just really feeling like a drop of yes in an ocean of no. And looking around the world and seeing things. And we were traveling and interacting with these projects simultaneously to the enormous oil spill in the Gulf that was happening last spring. And you know, so like reading these pieces at night online about like that there was this potential that if that oil spill was not dealt, was not capped, at the time we didn't know we were going to be able to cap it, that there is this potential that it might kill all the world's oceans, which as a sort of, as an ecosystem, the role of the oceans play in our global ecosystem would have more or less, you know, meant killing most of life on the planet. And so sort of looking at those kind of things simultaneously to like visiting these groups of 20 people who were, you know, carving beautiful little manifestations of human life into their landscapes, again, it sort of just felt like a lot of no and a little bit of death. It felt like a very useful personal process to, like, to almost set down this, this, like, idea that I grew up with, which was that we're gonna solve these problems in a way, and we were gonna do it in time for it to be smooth, for that transition to be smooth. I feel like I've had to set down that idea, in the following year. And in some ways it feels like an even more grounded place to be living from and to be designing from, to sort of be really deeply grounded in sort of the tragedy and the sorrow and the pain that is prevalent to what's going on in the world right now. But also to be moving from a place of what can I do in response to that, which is just like, move, you know, make my greatest effort to contribute a small measure of peace. And so just not having my answer be any different, but having it be grounded in a different place, which ultimately has felt useful.
How insightful. I mean, that sounds, you're only 24, right, you're saying?
That's correct, yeah.
And do you think you're pretty unique like, I work for an environmental organization myself, and I do have students that come in, but there's not a heck of a lot, really. I mean, most of people your age might be trying to set a career path, or, you know, thinking how they can make, you know, their living and everything, and buy their stuff, and I don't know, what do you think? Do you feel there's a bit of a change? Do you think young people are like you, in the sense that they are trying to make those changes, trying to do their bit?
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, you traveled and you saw all these projects. What kind of people were doing all this?
Sure. I mean, yes, there are absolutely people of all ages, but in particular young people, all over the world, who are showing up to this conversation, to this task, in a really powerful way, and in a really different way, I think, than it's been approached in previous decades. There's also an enormous amount of apathy in our culture. I think what allows me to, like, fall asleep at night is sort of, I don't know if you're familiar with the 80-20 principle, but it's a very deeply proven mathematical equation which applies to social systems and natural systems, which is that 80% of the results in almost any system come from 20% of the participants. And this is true in natural systems. It's true if you look at peas, you know, 80% of the peas are produced by 20% of the pea pod. Remembering that it's not going to take everyone showing up. It's going to take a certain serious number of people showing up to the conversation and actually stepping up and doing what it takes. Yeah. But that ultimately, it doesn't actually have to be everyone. And I feel like when I, like, look around, like, the world, I'm like, oh my god, how are we ever going to do this? Mm-hmm. I feel like I go back to that as a grounding place of, like, you know, right, mm-hmm. we need to be working, but I don't have to lose hope because if I meet someone who I can't fathom how they're interacting with the world, like the person driving the Hummer, I don't necessarily need to convince them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right, yeah. And you won't, right? So
right, exactly.
Why
frustrate
yourself? Yeah,
it'll still work if they're not convinced.
Yeah, for sure.
It'll still work. We can still make it happen even if they're not on board.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great. The younger people are showing up in a different way to the conversation than what they the usual way. What way is that? Can you just elaborate on that?
Yeah. Well, in the social justice and environmental movements, I think that there has been a lot of really well-intentioned people who have spent an enormous amount of energy fighting against things in those movements, and have done so from a place of, from an internal place that is quite straught with distress. And so when I say that, what I mean is working with groups who are really focusing deeply on, and throughout my work, this is a fundamental piece of what I try to bring, which is having our work come from an internal place that is very sort of aligned and clean with what we're trying to achieve. And so really deeply examining how we are in it together as a foundation for how what we're trying to create in the world. And I think what comes from that is the realization that we need to be building rather than resisting, modeling rather than fighting, and that we need to be slowing it down and doing the deep internal work that is the foundation of all of our external work, and that if we're trying to go about this and we're bringing all of our our experience of oppression to the table, that we will accidentally, automatically be building what we're building on the same foundation.
Mm.
And so needing to slow it down and really do that internal work.
And you're finding that people, younger people, are coming to it from that position rather than the fear and everything, right?
I'm going to say that I do have the great privilege of knowing and working with people who are approaching it that way.
Mm.
And that some of the best work that I see happening in the world is happening from that place. And that there absolutely are still, you know, lots of people working in older, more traditional, hierarchical models, but that there are different things happening as well.
You're an entrepreneur. You're also a social, it sounds like you're an activist, and someone who's really concerned with creating like a sustainable, participatory world, right? Like a do-it-yourself kind of culture. Do you like to define yourself in any way, or, you know, do you say, this is my work? Do you have a kind of a definition for what you do?
Well, I definitely think of myself as an entrepreneur and as a sort of project architect.
Mm.
It's something I find that I am quite good at, which is designing sort of vehicles and platforms for people to work on things together in a way that is creating a different model than has existed before. So that's sort of what gets me going the most is when I'm working on sort of building and creating those kind of vehicles and platforms. But I'd also define myself as just like a really passionate and curious human, sort of first and foremost, and someone who is like really grounded in really simple pieces of gratitude, like that I'm alive and that I have my breath that flows in and out of my body every day without asking for thanks. I'm also, you know, can be a pain in the ass sometimes, and can be egotistical and at times, and you know, I'm a flawed and imperfect human who strives every day toward growth and appreciates the people around me being patient and giving me feedback.
So do you think that this was this attitude that you have, this way of looking at life, or is it influenced by being unschooled, growing up unschooled?
I think it was a critical piece for sure. The amount of experience that I got to have as a sort of teen and young adult, asking these questions, which was, what do I care about? What am I passionate about? And then not only asking those questions, but then getting to take it to the next step, which is, how am I going to design a way to pursue that? How am I going to design a vehicle to pursue that? That's sort of what I mean by like the natural evolution into project design and organizational design, which is like, it's just the same thing on a little bit bigger scale and involves more people. And so I think that was hugely important, hugely supportive. But also it also just spawns from the culture that I grew up in and the privileges that I grew up with. When I say that, I both mean that the people I had as mentors and the spaces that I had as mentors growing up. And also, you know, to name that, I grew up as a upper middle class white man in a culture that deeply supports that type of individual having access to resources and privilege, and so it's like definitely see that as a piece, of course, but unschooling was a huge part of that, and then of course there is it's a web of pieces, so.
And would you say that unschooling maybe in a way has, because, you know, sometimes the argument that when you're unschooled, you're not necessarily prepared for the world in the sense that the world is really competitive and really just, you know, like maybe in a way unschooling is a bit idealistic. Have you heard that kind of?
I have heard that. I think that's true. I think that you're not very well prepared to work for corporate America.
Yeah.
Which I think is the world that people are describing when they say the world that you're not prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're going to be very good at, like, you know, just doing meaningless stuff just for the sake of bringing home a crappy paycheck. Or like, you know, just doing what everyone else is doing just because it's the thing to do.
Mm.
So in that sense, you know, allergic to, you know, being allergic to, like, you know, doing things for no good reason and bullshit, I think is a perfectly reasonable thing to support people in pursuing through their education. And I also think that there are a number of people who would be uncomfortable having their children or friends be revolutionaries, or, you know, or be people who are going to pursue passionately the lifestyle that they feel is most aligned with their passions and values. So.
Right. But I find that, like, I've talked to lots of unschoolers, and I know lots of them too, and I find that there's something that an underlying similarity with everybody is that they're very self. They know what they want. It's like they're willing to take less of you know, the dominant culture is kind of like, they're more concerned, as you said, with like doing something meaningful with their life. And I find a courageous group of people, like a really inquisitive, really curious set bunch of people. That's what I've been noticing anyway. I don't know, have you had a lot of contact with other unschoolers?
Oh yeah, an enormous amount of, I've been quite active growing up in sort of the national unschooling movements, and I think that there is, my experience is there's a direct relationship between security and freedom, which is that the more security you have, the less freedom you have, and the more freedom that you have, the less security you have. And I think that, you know, like a maximum security prison is one of the most secure places you can possibly be, and yet you have probably the least freedom in there of almost any institutional setup. I think that generally our culture tends to put more emphasis on security than they do on freedom. And so I think that if we want to try to speak in generalizations, which I think is very dangerous, but if we want to try to speak in generalizations, that unschoolers tend to be swinging their lives more toward the side of freedom and less to the, and less on the spectrum of security.
Yeah.
And so courageous is a brilliant word to use to describe that. And people who are willing to leap. And I guess in my life, I've had the experience dozens of times of coming up against a threshold that requires me to leap into an unknown. And it's scary. And time and time again, I have a hard time with it. And time again, I've been so relieved and overjoyed when I've taken that risk and taken that leap, even when it's been catastrophic, and even when it's resulted in failure. Failure has been one of my greatest, you know, teachers.
Yes.
And so having that relationship, recognizing that what the heck, and sort of could go through that shift of realizing that failure wasn't a bad thing, that failure, if dealt with appropriately and learned from appropriately, was one of the most valuable experiences in my life. So I think that takes an enormous amount of courage, and so that's why I'm so moved by unschoolers as a generalization.
That's wonderful. It's so, when you just said failure, and you think about how in the culture we're taught failure is wrong, you know, it's disgraceful. But really, there's a quote, I don't know who said it, but someone famous said that if you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough, something like that.
Absolutely.
You're not being daring enough. Or what I'm hearing from you also is that it's like a do-it-yourself way of life. You're just taking control and doing your own thing, right? It sounds like you're making, creating, participating. It sounds very community-oriented and very grassroots.
Yeah, the other work that I'm involved in that I just wanted to mention is that I'm on the board of directors of this really awesome organization called the Common Fire Foundation. And the work that we do is around supporting people who are building intentional communities. Links to information to all of the projects that I've mentioned can be found on my website, which is seanritchie.com. It's very true that that there's been a lot of creative sort of make it my own happening in my life. I'm generally find that I'm the happiest when I'm sort of pushing myself and pushing the envelope of the world around me to sort of try to be creating, creating something that's really, I guess I had this shift about 2 years ago where I stopped thinking about my life in terms of success and started thinking about it in terms of contribution. And realized that if I stopped wanting to pursue success and really wanted to be focusing on the degree to which I was contributing on a day-to-day basis, and to start thinking of myself as a contribution rather than as successful or not. And it's sort of been a simple shift of approach and mindset, but it's been sort of internally revolutionary in how I'm thinking about it. And going about my life and designing and making my choices. And I guess if I had to like summarize how I've like approached my life for people who are maybe like not necessarily prone, like feeling attracted to entrepreneurship, but purely that I've made sort of career decisions, with sort of education and contribution at the forefront of the decision, throughout my life. And that has felt significant. So, like, when making a choice, whether or not to take an internship or to take a job or to start collaborating with someone or to start a business, sort of using that model, that lens, which is, you know, what is the learning opportunity? What is the way that this is going to be expanding my experience of the world? And then also, in what ways is this choice, is this engagement with the world going to be a contribution? The combination of those two questions have driven many, many of my decisions in my life.
Yeah. Is there anything that unschoolers, someone growing up today unschooled, should know that you would want to share with them?
I guess there's an experience, I think, when, I guess I could not recommend enough amassing a brilliant support team. And when I say that, I mean, you know, your mentors, friends, collaborators, that the people who you have around you and the people who you work with, the people who you learn from, are so pinnacle in supporting you and shaping you into who you become on a day-to-day basis. And so if there's, like, one area of your life that I would, like, support people in being the boldest, it's approaching those people who they admire and who they want to learn from, and asking for them to be their teachers, asking them to be their mentors, asking for them to be their collaborators. And there's a story that I heard once about an architect, a great architect, who on his deathbed said, you know, my one regret dying is that nobody ever came and knocked on my door and said, teach me, because now I'm dying and my brilliance goes with me. And sort of, I remember that whenever I'm like being intimidated and nervous about approaching someone, and have been rewarded so many times just by sort of taking that leap and approaching someone and asking for their support or guidance or leadership. And that a lot of people tend to be, you know, really excited about the idea. And if they're not, tell you to piss off, then you probably don't want anything to do with them anyway.
Okay,
go for it.
That's excellent. Website, SeanRitchie.com. And
yeah, and my personal email, which is the best way to get in touch with me, is yoursTruly@SeanRitchie.com. And for people who are listening to this, I would love to hear from you if you have questions or felt like it would be supportive to talk to me. And so what I just said about approaching people, I think you can, if there's any part of you that feels inclined to be in touch with me, please do so. I would be more than happy to talk and be supportive as I can be.